This is The Huddle.
This is what we do.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
Presented by DUIHeroes.com.
The Huddle.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. It's one of our favorite segments because we are going in the trenches with Ray Roberts joining us right now. What's up, Ray?
Nothing much. How are you guys doing?
We're good. I was listening to you on the Seahawks postgame show on my way home from the game, and I caught midway through a conversation about the run game, so that's actually where I want to start because I think it was a big point to make. It felt like, to me, this was something where on either side they struggled. Defense versus Derrick Henry. Henry won that battle, and then Seattle couldn't sustain their drives with the run. What did you see specifically with that, including up front, maybe for Seattle's offense?
Yeah, so for Seattle, I thought that the approach to the running game looked different than what they had done in week one. In week one, they used a lot of that pre-snap motion, and then the only other way I know how to say it is like at the snap movement that kind of created some hesitancy in the defense, so then allowed the offensive line to get onto their blocks and up to the second level a little better, and so they were a little better running the football. And then on Sunday against the Titans, it just didn't seem like they were doing those types of things. So I wasn't real clear that they were really clear on how they wanted to attack the running game. And then on top of that, I don't know that the guards and the center. I think Damian Lewis played okay, but I think that Gabe Jackson struggled a little bit in the middle there, along with the center. And so when you can't get those three interior guys winning most of their battles when you're kind of running that zone concept, there's usually nowhere to create holes to run the ball. So I don't know that that the play to support a good running game, and then I don't know that the play calling and the approach was there to support a good running game. As it relates to Derrick Henry, man, it's just like that was classic Derrick Henry. Like he gains a lot of yards after contact, and he gains a lot of yards in the second half, like halfway through the third quarter to the end of the game. So a lot of teams get excited about, hey, we bottled him up in the first half, and then you want to know, well, what happened in the second half? Well, that's just kind of what he does. That's been his MO, throughout his career here in the league. He doesn't get panicked in the first half. The Titans didn't get panicked, and they just seemed more committed and disciplined to what they were doing than the Seahawks seemed more disciplined and committed to how they wanted to stop him.
Yeah, I agree, Ray. That's what I would say, and what I've been saying this week is that, in the NFL, you win when you do right longer. Whoever does right for the longest time, and that, you never saw any of that, and no matter what the score was, the Titans just stuck with what their plan was, and they were just going to continue to grind away at the defense and get Derrick Henry his carries. And I thought it was, I thought that their defense was really well coached. And I'm sorry, nobody wants to hear this, but I felt like this was one of the better teams that has come in here and had a really good plan. And I just liked it was very old school the way that they stuck with what they had.
Yeah, and it was super physical. I mean, they played physical big boy football, and so there wasn't any, prettiness to how they were running the ball. And then all of a sudden, the Seahawks felt like they had to take chances to stop the run, and then you pop one for 60 yards and a touchdown. And so, there's a lot of talk around who was at fault for that, who should have done this, that, and the other thing. But when you can feel that running game was getting started, then you have to do run blitzes and all the, we saw Bobby running through, the backside gap sometimes to get to the tackle. And so you're just trying to sell all out to stop the run. And then in situations like that, it can be one, someone missing one gap or one good block or one missed tackle. And a guy like him, even though as big as he is, can take it 60 yards for a touchdown.
Ray, what I saw from the running game, it really surprised me to not see this group, especially in the interior, not have as successful a day at the office as I was anticipating. I mean, the Tennessee Titans, credit to them, their front seven, they got after it. They were very physical coming downhill. But were you seeing some of the same things that I were, and what would you have done to try to maybe change that up to give them the best chance at success?
Yeah, so I definitely saw that, Jake. And the thing that I noticed more than anything was that the defensive linemen for the Titans were using their hands really well to create separation. So there's a few times where Gabe Jackson just wasn't moving the defensive lineman anywhere, and the dude just had him completely locked out. And then when the ball came, when Carson came, he just, you know, got off the block and made the tackle. And so I think things happen like that. You have to find, you either got to, you know, we're doing a lot of the zone blocking. Maybe, you know, do some down blocking and pulling, get out on the edge a little bit and get out from between the tackles, make those big defensive linemen have to run sideline to sideline a little bit to get them a little worn out. Or then, you know, or do what you did, you know, in the first game, throw some eye candy there to slow everybody down a little bit. Because the one thing about, you know, I want to run the ball 100 times a game if we can. But the one thing about, you know, the zone blocking schemes and is that people, once they read them, the linebackers attack downhill really hard, and it makes it hard to sustain the double team at the line of scrimmage because they pull that second lineman off the double team faster. And so putting a little eye candy, it slows that down a little bit so that the guard or the tackle or the center can get up to the second level. And I thought they could have helped themselves a little bit with that. They tried it a little bit later in the game, but I think one time they fumbled the ball, like they got the motion and the handoff all mixed up and everything. But I thought they could have, they have some stuff in their playbook that could have helped the offensive line a little bit, loosen up some of that defense.
It's going to be an interesting unit to watch as a whole this week with Brandon Schell being day-to-day. Jamarco Jones could start in his place. You guys, make sure you're following Big Ray Roberts at Big Ray Roberts on Twitter. He's got Big Ray's Garage Grind. It's some good takeaways from the game. I always love seeing those every single week, Ray. And obviously you can hear Ray in addition to On the Huddle with us normally on Thursdays on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. Thanks, Ray.
Hey, thanks for having me. You guys are doing a great job, and really enjoy having the opportunity to get on and talk a little trenches with you guys.
Thanks, Ray. We always love having you.
All right, peace out.
He is Ray Roberts, part of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. I really do. He is the best person in the entire world to talk about, obviously with everything football, but during training camp, I would go up to him and Jake, I saw you doing it, plenty of people do, and you just like, hey, Ray, what are you seeing here? And he can break down in a way that's so easy to understand.
You know when Jake was torching me as a defensive coordinator when he was in high school? My head coach was Ray Roberts.
There's a little history there with Big Ray and Dave, and that's why they both don't like me. So
I mean, hey,
I catch nasty looks from them all the time. But you know, to your point, Ray does such a great job in terms of articulating a very complicated thing because offensive line play is intricate. Like people just think of it as, oh, you just dominate the other guy.
It's an overlooked unit.
It is, and there's so much technique. There's so much involved. Combo blocks, the way you work together, your technique, and all those different things and how it all comes together. Ray does an excellent job with that.
All right, Steve Rabel, play-by-play man for the Seahawks, going to join us next on The Huddle. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Huddle. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. We are getting you ready for the Seahawks Week 3 game on the road against the Minnesota Vikings. Joining us right now, the voice of the Seahawks himself, Steve Rabel. Rabes, what's up?
How you doing, kids?
We are very excited, not just to be with you, but also maybe looking ahead, trying to look past this loss. So I'll go ahead and just kind of skip what happened against the Titans, even though some of it is going to have to be corrected. So I'll start with this. What's one of the biggest weapons that Minnesota is going to bring this team?
Well, I can tell you his number is 33, and it's spelled Dalvin Cook. He is, I think, the best weapon they have. I mean, they've got some good receivers, and their quarterback, Cousins, is pretty consistent. But Dalvin Cook is a difference maker. He is as good a running back, I think, as there is right now in the league. He can get banged up a little bit because he's not the biggest guy in the world. He's only, you know, like 210 pounds or something. But he is strong. He is explosive. He's a one-cut-and-go guy, and he will be on the corner and upfield if you're not prepared for him in a heartbeat. And he was on his way to a big game against us last season before he got nicked up. And his replacement came in and ran for over 100 yards. So, obviously, we needed a little help on just stopping the run, regardless of who was playing. But Dalvin Cook, to me, is the guy that makes that offense go. And besides that, I mean, Mike Zimmer is an old-school coach. Yeah, he loves to see the big plays and the pass receiving and all that stuff. But he likes to play defense and run the ball.
Hey, Rabes, have you ever called a field goal no good when it was good and vice versa?
No, I don't believe I have, and I've held off a couple of times in actually making the call. And you've heard me say this, Dave. You know, waiting
I don't
for the official to make the call. You know, is it good? Is it not good? Because yeah. You just don't want to make that mistake. So I don't ever remember actually making a call like that, saying that it was good where it wasn't good. You know, there are times when did he make the catch, and it's really tough to tell. But I'm guessing that those guys were doing the game off of a monitor.
Yeah.
And so they weren't able to see that angle that you really want to see, which is from behind the goalposts, unless you're right there in the building where you can see the officials down below the uprights when they put their arms up or they wave it off. So, yeah, that was kind of tough on those guys. But, well, you know, hey, it'll be forgotten by next week.
Oh, yeah, and Paul Allen's like one of the best, too. I mean, he does a really good job.
He's been around a long time. But, you know, I yell, as you know, in the booth, but those guys, they lose their minds. I mean, yeah. Holy smokes, they go crazy.
Well, you know what I heard you two guys go crazy about is that DJ Reed taunting penalty. I mean, listening to you guys talk about it, I mean, I thought you guys were going to come unglued. I thought Dave might have walked down on the field to talk to the referee himself.
Yeah, you know, I don't agree with Dave on a lot of things, but on that, I mean, I really do. I just couldn't believe it. I think they're just trying to, I understand what they're trying to do. And let's face it, these things don't happen because, as somebody was saying yesterday or the day before, because, you know, Goodell decides, I don't want somebody waving a finger in somebody else's face. This stuff comes from the coaches and general managers. They're the ones who are in charge of making these rules and the kinds of things that they want the officials to really focus on. But that was so, I mean, immaterial. Like, yeah, it didn't lead to any points. I get you, all that stuff. But it just kind of takes the, you know, the wind out of your sails when you make a big play and then you're marching off 15 yards and it gives them another opportunity with the ball. And you never know. The next time it will cost points. I just think it's ridiculous. I think they're going too far overboard. You know, it used to be that you couldn't slug a guy. Okay, I got that.
Yeah.
Now you can't even look at him and make a comment. He might have been saying, you know what? I really like those socks you're wearing.
Nice
we
try.
Don't know because they threw a flag on it, for heaven's sakes.
He said, I'm so excited because you're Julio Jones. You're the best.
Yeah. Can I have your autograph?
Yeah, can we trade jerseys?
Let's trade jerseys at the end of the
game. Yeah, you want to trade jerseys?
Yeah. Well, it was kind of funny that the and I don't mean to dwell on it, but I'm going to. One of the things they said was, well, we don't want to see some big brawl that gets out of control. I mean, these guys have been taunting each other for, you know, decades. And have we ever seen, like, an out-of-control brawl in the NFL?
No.
I mean, typically it's – I would think they would back off of that one, Rabes. But, you know, as the season goes along.
I hope so. Only because I just think – well, you know, maybe if the Players Association really climbs on board and says this is ridiculous, yeah. You know the players don't like it. Pete tried to explain it in such a way that, you know, to try to keep, you know, because he doesn't want to, you know, make nasty with the rest of the coaches in the league and all that. It's just, it's the emphasis that you put on it, and it's the timing with which it's done, where it's done, where it happens in the game, those kinds of things. You know, it's one thing if you go running over to the far sidelines and you're screaming at somebody and you're poking your finger in the chest of another player on their sidelines and everybody's getting a little hot under the collar. That's one thing. But in the heat of the battle, right out there on the field and in such a minor way that it worked against DJ, I don't get it.
Rabel, we haven't had a chance to ask you this yet, but what was your overall impression of the second half of the game? That's really where everybody's focusing. That's where everything started to change for the game and on both sides of the ball. What were your impressions and what was the difference?
I'm trying to remember, Dave, and you remind me because, as you know, I'm old and I forget stuff. But I don't know that as we got into the middle of the third quarter and then into the fourth quarter, that we, you know, came out and actually commented specifically on the fact that, you know, wow, the Seahawks just aren't sustaining any drives here. It's another three downs and out. It's another punt, you know, unable to run the football. I know we didn't see a lot of, you know, Chris Carson at all, what, 30, 31 yards he had on the ground. That's not enough. This team can't win by doing it that way, I don't think. And then the biggest thing was the longer your defense is out on the field, the more they're getting pounded, you know, by Derrick Henry. So I just thought that second half was part of it was the defense just got worn down. I think, you know, you go into the game without Brian Monet, so he's one of your big run stuffers inside, and that starts to wear out those defensive linemen. But the way you overcome that, sure, you make tackles. But listen, that guy breaks a lot of tackles, and not just by the Seahawks, is you keep him on the bench. You know, convert some third downs. And that means sustaining and getting back to that balance that we saw in the first week that we didn't see this last week. And I got a feeling that that was one of the big messages that came across in Tell the Truth Monday was, hey, we got to go back to what we did a week ago. That works. Throwing deep is great, and yeah, you can score once in a while, but as many times as not, you're going to end up with a three and out and back on the bench.
Yeah, and Ribs, you know, I've been pining over this, the drive before halftime. Remember how masterful that was?
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
They didn't
use a timeout. Russ didn't use a timeout, I remember.
Right, they had two timeouts, and yeah, they didn't have to, and just the way they mixed it up, and Jake talked about spreading them out and then running the ball. You remember Alex Collins hit like a 23-yarder? So, yeah, they just kind of got away from that. That was kind of frustrating, but I thought more than anything that Tennessee really just – They're well coached, they're disciplined, and they just stuck with their game plan.
Well, yeah, and they've got some great playmakers. I mean, you know, Derrick Henry rushes for what, 180 yards or something, and then you got Julio Jones. I was a bit surprised that Julio had as much in the tank as he did. Still, I guess I remembered it from last year. He was kind of beat up last year, and we haven't seen really Brown because he's a young guy, and we have, you know, his former teammate Metcalf out here. So we tend to think of DK as being the premier guy out of that class, but. If I can, let me ask, and Jake, you're the other quarterback here, and I heard Michael Bumpus talking about this. It might have been in the post game show, or could have been, you know, this week early in the week. But he said something that I thought that really kind of resonated with me, that you can't fall in love with the deep pass. And I think at times, and I'm not putting this on Russ, but I'm just saying. A number of times we saw in this game, and especially late in the going, and obviously in the overtime, is that the bailout pass was deep down the sidelines instead of where is that 10-yard, 8-yard comeback, you know, with a defense that's playing deep. They don't want to get beat deep. Where are those passes? And I kind of shook my head. Yeah, I get that. You can't fall in love with the deep pass.
I would fully agree with you, Rabes, and a lot of those situations – uniquely is it's almost kind of how the play designed, how it's set up. You have one-on-one opportunities. You try to go for the one-on-one, but it just wasn't the high percentage one-on-one. Instead of a go ball, where's the slant? Where's the, as you said, the out? You know, different ways to create those mismatches. And I think that resonates with everybody as you're watching how they were unable to sustain those drives and get positive yardage early in these downs to get them in more advantageous third down situations.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. That's why you're where you are, Jake. You're just so darn smart.
You're just buttering me up.
He is,
yes,
Steve Vrabel, voice of the Seahawks. Rabes, always excited
Never
to hear y'all on the
for
call.
Me.
I know. Where's always excited to hear you on the call.
There should be a message there, Dave.
Yeah.
No, Dave. Me
loud
means
and
nothing
clear.
By it. All right. Well, I'll hear both of you, actually. Very excited for that. Let's hope this time around it's a win. Thanks so much, Rapes.
Let's do. All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. We are going to step across enemy lines here for a quick opponent preview of the Vikings with ESPN Vikings reporter Courtney Cronitz coming your way next.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Joining us right now for an opponent preview on The Huddle is Courtney Cronin, a Vikings reporter for ESPN. Hey, Courtney, how are you?
Hey, Stacey, I'm good. How are you?
We are fantastic. You're here with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps as well. We're kind of leaning into you for some insight here for the Seahawks' upcoming opponent as our listeners right now. So I'm going to start with just kind of, look, full disclosure, I have not been watching a lot of Vikings tape, but I have been looking over just the box scores. We know they can be misleading, but Courtney, it kind of seems like this is a team that could be 2-0, at least on paper, and they've just had some bad luck. Is that how it seems to you?
Yes and no. We were actually just talking about this at the end of practice, where are they really two plays away the fumble from Dalvin Cook in Cincinnati in overtime and the missed field goal at the end of regulation in Arizona, are they really those two plays away from being 2-0? And I think that you have to look through that and realize, obviously, there were plays that set up them to be in that situation where it's a game winner, effectively. That's in the last moment that's what they needed in order to win. And, you know, you look at the offense in Cincinnati and just how poor of a start they had and how bad the offensive line looked and all the penalties. And I think that factors into the cumulative effect of what happened that game, that they even had to kick a 53-yard field goal to go to overtime to beat the Bengals. And then last week, the offense starts out hot and they were really good, but then they only generate 3 points in the second half. They kind of slowed down. The defense was getting gashed by these big 15-plus yard throws and completions from Kyler Murray. So you can look at it in a vacuum and say, yeah, they lost because Greg Joseph didn't kick that 37-yard field goal, or because Dalvin Cook fumbled the ball away just outside of the 30-yard line, and then Cincinnati went down and kicked a field goal of their own to win. You can look at those things and say that is the reason, tangibly, but there's so much that goes beyond that shows that the team's kind of playing this weird game of whack-a-mole where, you know, when you hit your hand on the defense – to get that to like stop popping its head up, then the offense pops up. And when you put your hand on that, then the special teams issues start becoming more apparent. So it just hasn't felt like they've been totally in sync from top to bottom these first 2 weeks. And, you know, that's very much, in my opinion, the reason that they are 0-2.
I like that comparison, the whack-a-mole. That's good stuff. Well, let me ask you about Kirk Cousins. He's, you know, I've always admired his completion percentage. It's always so good. What kind of a leader is he, Courtney?
You know, it's interesting because Zim said today, when I asked him about the first 2 weeks, because you really cannot point at either loss and say that's Kirk Cousins' fault. He did this wrong. He did that wrong. And that's the reason they lost the game. Truthfully, I mean, he's been one of the bright spots for them. And I know that the offense in general came into the season as a question mark. Like, we knew what we were going to get out of Kirk Cousins. But, you know, the offense and the sample size, just like how poorly they played in the preseason, not knowing what the offensive line was going to look like, et cetera, that was a big unknown. But, you know, with Kirk, I think the thing that you've really been impressed by with him in these last two games is the position that he had the team in to win the games at the end. Like the drive in Arizona this past week when, you know, get the ball down to the 19-yard line, they call a timeout. Kirk was telling us after the game that he wished he would have, you know, they would have gotten a little bit closer, which, you know, typically that's a little bit more dangerous just in terms of, I mean, maybe you go down and score, who knows, because you did have about 44 seconds there, but, you know, who knows if you get closer with kicking a field goal from that close, typically the percentages aren't really, really great, but nonetheless, he put them in position to win in Arizona with where he got them field position-wise. He put them in position in overtime, and then obviously the fumble cost them that. So I think that Kirk has played really well, and the interesting thing with what I asked Mike Zimmer about today, and he brought up unprompted, is that he's impressed by Kirk's leadership this year, which doesn't sound like a lot just because of, you know, the relationship between head coach and quarterback has definitely felt strained because of, you know, the COVID stuff this season and everything else that kind of factors into, you know, the success of the quarterback and, you know, the head coach being very much tied into that. But I think what Zim was getting at is that he, you know, all these years in, 4 years in now of him leading the offense, like he's the guy, he's that franchise leader that they needed. Like in previous situations, maybe he would have shied away from galvanizing the locker room, but now he is that guy. And I think you're seeing that pay off. And it's, you know, those clutch moments and critical moments like the fourth quarter, like that's pretty tangible, I think, to this team and just the position that Kirk has had them in.
Courtney, there's a couple really big injury new pieces of nuggets here that for the Vikings that are, I think, important for Seahawks fans to know. Who has the best chance of returning for the Vikings that are key players? And then is there any injury issues right now at the Vikings that anybody where you guys are at are worried about?
You know, it's interesting because Anthony Barr was at practice today And we haven't seen him really since August go through a full practice. He's got a knee issue. They've been, you know, kind of one step forward, five steps back with him. And I think you'd be hard pressed the way that Nick Vigil is playing right now to take him out of the lineup when you're in your nickel defense. So I'm really curious to see if Barr can get through. We'll get the injury report here soon, see how much he did. I would imagine he was limited in his first day back, but I do think that there's, you know, reason to believe that they're going to try to go slow with Barr on this thing, because it sounds like it's a chronic, maybe even like an arthritic condition that he's dealing with in his right knee. But outside of him, I mean, Everson Griffin was in the concussion protocol. Teams don't have to announce whether you're cleared or not. I think it's just kind of a given depending upon like how much you're practicing. But he was out there today. I would imagine he'll be listed as limited. That's a big part of their pass rush, just because of the situational role that he's back here playing. And when you face a Russell Wilson, you need as much help as you can get from the guys up front. So, I mean, those are the two big ones. I still think Christian Darrisaw is probably a week or two at minimum away from even contending to take over that left tackle spot. Just because, you know, Mike Zimmer said this is going to be a long process with the rookie left tackle. Usually a long process is more than a couple weeks. So we will see about that. But it was a good sign. Again, he was out there practicing today.
She is ESPN Vikings reporter Courtney Cronin. She's also got a really fascinating article, you guys, on the Vikings kicking woes. It's really, really interesting. I just retweeted it. Courtney, good stuff, obviously, with this article. And we really enjoyed your preview with us. Helps us understand a bit more about this Minnesota team. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. See you out there. Take care.
All right. Again, that was ESPN Vikings reporter Courtney Cronin for an opponent preview there. Shoot, I wish I would have gotten in a question about Justin Jefferson and KJ Osborne, because I was expecting Jefferson to be leading this team with receptions and yards. Very curious about the start to the season for those two guys. But alas, we are going back to some final Seahawks thoughts, and we'll take a look at this team, where they are now that we have all of the information during the course of our two-hour huddle, and we'll look ahead to week three. It's coming your way next.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. We are getting you guys ready for the Seahawks Week 3 game. This one's on the road against the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings 0-2, but we learned plenty more, not just about the Vikings, but also looking back at Tennessee, that loss in Week 2, to learn a bit more about what the Seahawks need to do. So, upon reflection, we'll have some final thoughts here, and I'll get us started with mine, though, Dave. I think you're going to want to elaborate a bit more on mine. Mine is kind of the biggest takeaway is that Kirk Cousins not really at fault for those two losses so far for the Vikings. When I did my own preview and I'm looking at all these names and I'm writing them down, Dalvin Cook, you've got circled. Justin Jefferson, you've got circled, even though he's not leading the team with receiving yards right now. A guy like Eric Kendricks on defense. But we spoke with Courtney Cronin, a Vikings reporter for ESPN, who said, you know what, Kirk Cousins has played really well so far, not at fault for those losses, and has been a bright spot. So I think he's can be quite a bit more dangerous than people give him credit for.
Well, you look at his numbers. I mean, and look, again, going back to he's one of two, I think, players in NFL history to finish a full season with over 70% completion. Jake, I'm not sure if that's
I can believe
confirm
so.
That. I really I don't care
so,
that much about
to
quarterbacks, so I typically don't pay attention.
I'll have to try to confirm that for you.
But no, I mean, five touchdowns, zero interceptions. Yeah, he hasn't made a lot of mistakes. And, you know, you go and look, and I was watching the Cincinnati game. I don't know that that was a fumble. And, you know, it was with 2 minutes, man. They were inside the 50-yard line. They're driving. And then, you know, it wasn't super clear, the Dalvin Cook fumble. So, but yeah, and then, you know, you look on their defense, they've got some very talented guys. She was talking about Nick Vigil and how maybe they weren't going to bring back Anthony Barr necessarily, and he's playing really well. Nick Vigil is, and, you know, and Eric Kendricks is one of the best linebackers against the pass. The guy always has like 10, 12 passes knocked down, gets picks. You know, we saw how tough they are. Harrison Smith last year, Patrick Peterson's there now. So, yeah, this is a good team coming in here, man. They're not coming in here. We're going in there. And that's, I was thinking about last year when they came in, and they were lucky to win that game.
Yeah.
I mean, look, they had to make a lot of, that was the one probably you needed the most Okay, so there was a third down stop that I think Benson Mayoa was in on, which was unbelievable. It was a reverse to Jesse Thielen, and they both ran all the way over there. I think it was him and DeMontre Moore and hit him out of bounds.
Wasn't it just
barely short? Yeah. I mean, it was like if they hadn't hustled, it would have been a first down and the game was over.
Yep.
Then they stop him on fourth down. Then Russ has a fourth and 10 that he picks up, and then the touchdown pass was a fourth down.
Correct. Yes.
So, I mean, they could have easily lost that game. And again, Madison went on a tear running for 112 yards. I think Cook had, you know, 40 or 50 before he got hurt. But that's, to me, the defense has to, they got to stop the run. And, you know, they're going to have to be really physical. And there was a lot of breakdowns last week. So we'll see how that goes. But I think that's job one going in.
It is job one, no question about that. And this is the unique part in all the conversation that has happened around how the Seahawks won, how the Seahawks offense has operated. The one thing that you don't want to discourage is their ability to start fast. You don't want to discourage the killer instinct that they've had at the beginning of games. What you do want to be better at is sustaining drives and being better, keeping that time of possession in the second half and being able to march and continue to keep putting points up on the board, or at least maintain that time of possession, convert on third downs. Those are going to be key critical situational issues that you look at for the Seahawks offense that they have to do. And if they can fix some of those things, it makes them extremely tough to stop.
Who are one or two players that become maybe the most important guys in this game for you? I know it's a team sport, but for instance, I'm looking at stopping Dalvin Cook. Suddenly you're looking at that defensive line once again.
Yeah, I would say linebackers got to play downhill, you know, and have to be really physical. You can't, you know, you can't just make a tackle, you know, 6, 7, 8 yards downfield. It's got to be at the line of scrimmage. So, you know, I always put on linebackers just because I was a linebacker. D-line, you know, I mean, the big guys up front. I thought Al Woods had a really good game. We were talking about Brian Monet not being there, but Al Woods more than made up for it, I thought, with the sack and a couple of the – and he was battling in there. Did you see, like, his pads are flipped up. His jersey's all
jersey
twisted
was
around.
Almost like inside his in the middle of his chest.
I think much like offensive linemen, when defensive tackles in particular get really involved in a play, it just, like, it makes you really like, yeah, let's go. You're fired up.
What
yeah.
is Al Woods, number 90? I think he's number 90. It was like the zero was on the other side. It was like 09. I mean, it was just, he was battling in there. So, you know, I thought, yeah, Brian Monet is great, but I thought Al Woods more than, you know, made up for it. But, you know, they're going to need all hands on deck this week because, you know, like I said, the runs, Dalvin Cook is incredibly explosive. And then I just think they have a good running game in general because they can plug whoever in like they did last year, and he's going to get yards too.
Yeah, the two, I mean, you look at the defensive focus from Dave. I mean, I'll obviously focus on the offense, and the two areas that I think the two people, I would say a group and then one player. The first thing is when you talk about the run game, people like to say, oh, you didn't get enough carries, and that is true. But the reason why that also didn't happen was because you were not successful in that run game. The offensive line really struggled on the interior. They got it taken to them. And guess what? They're going to go up against a really good interior defensive line against the Vikings. So you've got to fix whatever the issues were in a hurry and get yourself back on track. Damian Lewis, Kyle Fuller, and Gabe Jackson, you've got to get that fixed. And then the other person you point to is Russell Wilson, right? When the game is on the line, when you have an opportunity to win the game, more often than not, you are going to love handing the ball off to Russell Wilson and say, hey, go win us this game. He's going to win it for you more times than not. He didn't come through against the Tennessee Titans the way that everybody would want him to. And so Russ has got to be better in this game, particularly on third downs. And if that situation arises, he did it last year against Minnesota. Can he do it again? Can he fix that? I think that that's the areas of focus that I'm going to be paying attention to.
By the way, Al Woods wears 99, so it didn't really matter which side.
Well, the point is that the bottom of the 9 was tucked up, so it looked like a 90.
Maybe it looked like two sixes.
Yeah, I was getting what you were saying.
You could basically see his pecs. That's how much his jersey and his pads were all jumbled up in the middle of his body. But the thing I kept feeling for him was, they kept those guys on the field. Al Woods didn't. I mean, he was on the field a lot.
Yeah.
And he was out there, and he was giving his best effort, man. I mean, hats off to him.
Look, we have 2 minutes left here, so 2-minute drill. I want to be able to end on kind of an exciting note for fans that want to turn back from a really heartbreaking loss against Tennessee and look ahead to a good weekend of football. So I'm not going to make anyone do a score prediction, but is this a winnable game for Seattle?
Of course. Yeah, I mean, I think they can win any game. And you look at, and we're going to talk about this on our show, you know, how many starters are there from this defense that would be, you know, how many teams do they start on? And, you know, I think they have enough talent. It's just about playing together. So, and certainly the offense and the way they operated in Indianapolis, that, and they travel well. I mean, they've been really good on the road the last few years. I mean, look at, they were 7-1 in 2019, and the early time slot, which this is not, by the way, it's a later game, but still, I think they travel well, and you know, their backs are up against the wall a little bit.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think this is a totally winnable game for the Seahawks, and they are one of the more talented teams in the NFL. It's just about taking care of business. It's about playing complementary football. And as Dave said, I think that the defense has an incredible task. Like I said this last week with the Tennessee Titans, the defense has a very difficult task on their hands, and we'll see if they can play hero in this game.
All right, again, the Seahawks' Week 3 opponent is going to be the Minnesota Vikings. That is going to be on the road at U.S. Bank Stadium against Kirk Cousins and crew. It'll be a tough one. I think that's one thing we've learned today from the huddle, but another thing we learned in our sum up here is that the Seahawks are certainly a talented enough team. They can and should be able to take this one if they're able to execute, able to play together, just like Dave said. So this has been the huddle, getting you guys ready with the 2-hour preview for the game. Hope you guys all enjoy this one. Let's hope they can come out with the W this time. For Dave Wyman, for Jake Heaps, I'm Stacey Ross. This has been The Huddle. We'll talk to you guys next Thursday.